You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Welcome to the program. A new week has arrived. We are glad you are with us here for the next 4 hours, and we will not waste your time. Well, we won't waste too much of your time. Great to have you on board. Let's get right to it with a lot of activity from over the weekend. How about this? A little concern. It's another NIL market about potential crackdowns.
No.
This isn't an athletic report. We basically quote somebody saying nobody's afraid of the NCAA any longer. Great story, and we'll talk about it this afternoon. Matt Luke, remember him? Ole Miss coach. Went to Georgia, did a great job there. Why Matt Luke walked away from college football is anxiety and pressure. We'll talk to the author of that shortly. Recruiting rankings, a lot of teams are moving up. LSU has entered the top 25, and don't look now, but Tennessee is in the top 10. These are the SEC teams in the top 25. A little bit deceiving, I might add, right now. It is May. Georgia, Arkansas, Tennessee, A&M, LSU. And does anybody buy Alabama at number 18?
Absolutely not.
Don't buy that.
No.
Blake Topmeyer, story out, talking about 8 SEC rivalries that will flourish after OU and Texas join in the SEC. Blake Topmeyer joining us now. Blake, it's always good to have you on. Thank you very, very much. But before we get to which rivalries will flourish, any idea when Texas and Oklahoma are coming into the league?
Well, I mean, right now it still seems like the timeline is at 2025. I mean, we've seen, the American Conference schools seem like they're going to be able to get out of their deal and get into the Big 12. According to reports, by 2023, which interestingly, so if those four schools are in and Texas and Oklahoma are still in at that time, you would at that point have a 14-team Big 12, right? It's always hard to keep up with the math of the Big 12 and how many teams are in it, and it's the Big 12 at 10. But there for a couple brief seasons, we could actually have the Big 12 being at 14 teams before it finally gets back to 12 teams after OU and Texas depart.
So let's get to your piece on OU and Texas. So for those who have not read your article, don't leave us in suspense any longer. Who benefits?
Well, I mean, I think right off the top, I look at Oklahoma and Alabama. I mean, you got two of the most iconic names in the sport, and yet they've only played just 6 times in the history of those two programs, of course, most recently in the college football playoff. Now, will they be meeting annually when Oklahoma joins in the SEC? No, I don't think there'll be annual matchups. But we've heard Greg Sankey say very consistently that he wants teams meeting more frequently than some teams do now. I mean, now in the SEC, if you're in opposite divisions, you could go as many as 7 years between meetings. And Greg Sankey has said that's not going to be the case. In an expanded conference, we could have teams meeting as regularly as every 2 years or maybe every 3 or 4 years. But in any case, we're going to start to see regular meetings between Oklahoma and Alabama. And I think, just given where those programs are in college football, both historically and where they've stood, in the past decade, I think that's a natural rivalry that can and will flourish once those two programs get in the same conference.
And I won't make you go through every one, but that is a great game. And we've seen that game a couple of times. We saw that game. We've seen that game in bowl games. We saw that series in, I believe it was 02 and 03. I remember being in Norman for one of those games and in Tuscaloosa for the other. So after that, I'll hold you to two or three more. What else looks good to you?
Well, I love the idea of getting Texas and Texas A&M back on the field together again. I mean, to me, the biggest downside from the last major round of conference realignment was all the rivalries that it disrupted. I think that's a marquee one that's going to be reestablished now by those teams getting together back in the same conference. So I like that one. I like Texas and Arkansas. We heard Sam Pittman last year leading up to that matchup in Fayetteville said, for a lot of Arkansas fans, Texas still ranks as the number one rival, despite, you know, all these years now in the SEC and how long it's been since Arkansas and Texas were in a conference there together in the Southwest Conference. You know, Sam Pittman, I think, correctly said, if you talk to Arkansas fans of a certain age, Texas remains a rival number one. And so I really like that one as well. And then I guess one more, you look at Auburn and Florida. You know, these were two teams that, you know, that played annually. That was a sacrifice of the SEC going to divisions. You know, they stopped playing regularly. But if you remember that game at the Swamp a couple years ago, sellout crowd. It was the first time Florida had played Auburn in many, many years. Both programs were highly ranked. I know I was not there, but I know in talking to some folks who were, the Swamp was rocking that day. And as you know, I mean, there are a lot of Auburn fans that live across the border there in the Florida Panhandle. So I think that's another rivalry that they're going to start meeting more regularly than they do now after the schedule is reconfigured. And I think that could help sort of re-elevate that. It's never going to trump, you know, the Iron Bowl. It's never going to trump, say, Florida State or Florida Georgia. But that's a rivalry that I think could sort of move up the pecking order again. Is that Auburn Florida game?
Kim, it's not little known, but it is. It's not that well known that Tim Tebow, one of the most famous players ever at Florida, is 0-2 against Auburn. And I try to remind him of that every year, every time we're in Auburn in the Florida. His career at Florida comes up. Blake, let me get to the story right now in college athletics, and it has so many different layers. But I want to start with all this big guy, tough guy, bravado talk from people in the bubble about the NCAA having to crack down on NIL violators as if they have the authority. Well, they do have the authority, but they have the ability, I should say, and the will, and what's behind the curtain, assuming that they would try that.
Yeah, and this train feels like it's out of the station, and it's been out of the station for several months now, and I have a hard time seeing that get put in reverse, you know. And we've seen the flaws of NCAA enforcement in the past. So if that's your grand solution, is for NCAA enforcement to crack down on pay for play, I think that's a flawed route. I mean, you know, we've heard Will Wade on federal wiretaps discuss things that sounded an awful lot like pay for play. I mean, we heard it. It was right there in front of us. And the NCAA still hasn't gotten around to reaching the conclusion in that case. So we've seen before just how flawed things can be when you're relying on NCAA enforcement to be your answer. And I also think, like, the door has been opened now to boosters. And so, you know, if we're going to tell boosters, now, wait a second, we can do these endorsement deals, but it can't be booster pay-for-play deals. I mean, how's that going to work, you know? And how are you going to prove that either? You know, how are you going to prove that an athlete chose made their college choice based on an endorsement deal? I think, you know, without the NCAA having any subpoena power, that's going to be incredibly hard to prove. And that's, you know, I'm no lawyer, no legal expert, but you have to wonder how much antitrust components is going to be involved here if you try to boost the boosters out and say your deals are no good, everybody else's deals are. I also wonder, Paul, we've heard a lot of, well, these deals shouldn't exceed market value. Well, that's the interesting thing about market value. Your value is whatever the market tells you your value is. So I think you're going to have a really hard time if you were ever to try to prove that these athletes were getting deals that weren't market value. I mean, like I said, if the market says that's what you're worth, then that's your market value. So I think they're going to have a really hard time, if they try to proceed forward with any of that type of situation.
Yeah, and Blake, there's so many layers of this NIL, and then all these coaches complaining about tampering. I hate to be too cynical, but it's difficult not to be, considering that you've never had a greener light to cheat right now. And if you're not cheating, you're very likely going to fall behind, are you not?
I think that's true. And, something someone said to me recently, Paul, was that college football is more corrupt than ever. And I took issue with that. I said, no, I don't think college sports is more corrupt than ever. I think the type of stuff that was happening below the table before is now happening above the table. And it makes some people very, very uncomfortable to see that. Before, we had this fairy tale of amateur athletics, and we could all kind of tell ourselves this nice story about nothing nefarious was happening. These are just, good, clean amateur athletics. And as we all know, a lot of these type of deals were happening below the table before. Now everything is above board. It's above the table. And a lot of folks don't like the sight of that. It's like you're all right to drink liquor on the street as long as you stick that liquor bottle in a brown bag, because maybe that's not what it is, right? if it's happening below board, if you stuff it in the brown paper bag, we can all convince ourselves, well, maybe that's not what's going on here. But now it's in the light of day. And like I said, a lot of folks, are not pleased that we no longer have this fairy tale of amateurism, and it's above board payments. It's above board pay for play.
And Blake, I probably asked you the same question 10 times because you were covering Tennessee at the time when this story broke. But now that we know all this, and I realize this is before the fact, but why is the NCAA still investigating the University of Tennessee over Jeremy Pruitt? Because it just seems like that I'm not trying to answer the question, but it just seems like what those allegations are no longer really hold much water, do they?
Well, I think the key in that case is that the school is providing is alleged for providing impermissible benefits, and the coaching staff is accused of arranging impermissible benefits at a time when that wasn't allowed. We're not necessarily talking about third party booster dollars or boosters handing cash to recruits in that case. I think the fine line here, I do think it is very fine. I agree with you, and we're certainly getting into the gray area. But I think where Tennessee maybe could continue to find trouble there is that, as I said, these are impermissible benefits that are alleged to have been arranged by the university or its employees at that time, as opposed to third-party dollars, which are now allowed. Now, the gray area is when you have some of these school collectives that are technically third-party, it's like, well, how third-party is that really? some of these collectives that are getting, more closely aligned with the universities themselves. So I agree. It is kind of muddied waters, and it is kind of a gray area, but I think that's sort of where I see the line.
I realize that this next question is not really germane, but a lot of people praise the university, Chancellor Plowman and others, for being proactive and tossing the bad guys out. Just for the sake of argument, had they not done that, where would we be on a case like this right now, if anywhere?
Well, had they not done that, I still think you could make the case that the best chance for Tennessee to get off scot-free here was to say, if you think anything, any rule-breaking conduct happened here, go ahead and prove it. NCAA, if you think Tennessee broke the rules, we're not going to admit it. Go ahead and prove that rule-breaking conduct happened here. I think that may have given Tennessee the best chance to protect itself from sanctions. However, Tennessee wanted to fire Jeremy Pruitt for cause, and they did not want to pay the buyout. And say what you will about whether this decision will work for Tennessee or not in terms of avoiding sanctions. We haven't learned that fate yet. I still think they could get, at the very least, a slap on the wrist here. But when it comes to paying that buyout, they've succeeded up to this point. There's been no lawsuit. There's been no settlement. They haven't had to pay Jeremy Pruitt a dime for firing him. Now, there's certainly an argument that in the long run, they could have been better off reaching a front-end settlement and telling the NCAA to go away and not open the doors to the NCAA. But at least in part one of firing Jeremy Pruitt without paying him a dime, Tennessee succeeded in that. Whether this is ultimately a successful move, a shrewd move, I think we have to wait and see what happens in part two and how stiff, if any, are the sanctions that await around the corner.
Great stuff. Blake Todmeyer joining us from USA Today. We'll appreciate it very much, Blake. We're heading to the break right now. Your phone calls begin in just a moment at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
So we've already talked to one guest. Emerson joins us in a little bit. Michael Bratton on the Mike Leach plan. And Ramon Foster later on. John Talty out with this tweet. Apparently Greg Sankey speaking today on the failed CFP expansion talks. This conference will thrive at four, period. Sankey being consistent on the fact that the SEC doesn't really need anymore, and that's pretty obvious. Of course, Sankey was part of the working group that tried to expand this to the CFP to 12. That was, of course, shot down by the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12. I almost forgot the Pac-12. Sorry about that. Joe is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just wanted to call and tell you I don't give a flip about Texas and Oklahoma. They don't belong in the Southeastern Conference. They don't live in the Southeastern Conference. And I will not accept them as a SEC team. I don't care what the hell they do with them.
Okay, Joe, a couple of quick questions here. Arkansas is in the SEC. Missouri is in the SEC. They are not exactly sitting in the middle of the South. So do you feel the same way about those two?
I'm very doubtful about both of those schools and always have been. I think the SEC belongs in the Southeastern Conference, not branching out mm-hmm. to these West teams.
Yeah.
I was born and raised in Tennessee.
And one more question, Joe. You said you're not going to accept it. Are you part of I don't mean to be snarky here, but is that you just as an individual, or do you have a public position that would matter whether or not they come in or not?
Oh, no. This is just me.
I just want to make sure you weren't like the president of one of the member institutions.
No. I am connected to the University of Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
In Knoxville.
Now you're connected to
Tennessee in Memphis.
Okay. That's fair. By the way, you didn't need to tell me that. I mean, you could have just been public citizen and had that, but I just want to make sure.
I'm very proud of my attendance to both of these schools.
Right.
I'm an East Tennessean by birth, and I just don't like the idea of going way out west, and I consider these two schools way out west.
Yeah, I mean, they're not, let's see here, we have, which one is farther west, Austin or Norman? Does anyone know? Probably Austin by maybe the nose of a steer.
It would be close. It would be close, but I'm not interested in having.
Well, Joe, it's really not my job to sell you on those because the 14 presidents of the SEC have already allowed them to come in. But you do understand do you not, the value of a school like the University of Texas to the SEC?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't see a flipping thing that's good that for the Southeastern Conference.
While we're at it, Joe, I mean, if you want to, do you want to toss anybody out? As long as you have the floor, I mean, we can tell. We can tell a few schools to hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back.
I don't know why in the world they invited this place up in Missouri to come in.
This place would be called the University of Missouri.
Well, you can call it anything you want, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't consider it.
Happens to be a highly regarded university.
Well, I have been to every one of the schools to watch the University of Tennessee play.
Yeah.
That is in the Southeastern Conference.
Right.
My wife and I have traveled the entire route of the teams that are presently in, and I see no reason to.
Now, are you okay with are you okay with Texas A&M being in the SEC?
Well, I question them.
Okay.
I don't consider them. Southeastern Conference schools should be in the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah. Rather provincial thinking, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. That's a prejudiced opinion.
By the way, I'm not advocating this because I don't like it either, but have you ever stopped to think about the schools that are in the ACC?
No, I don't care nothing about the ACC.
Okay. I mean, you got Miami, and you got Syracuse, you got Boston College. I mean, the connections are I can't argue with your thoughts. Those are your thoughts. I also understand why Missouri got into the league, why A&M, and why Texas and Oklahoma are now heading this way. But you are welcome to think the way you are. We never try to change anyone's opinion on this show unless we disagree with it. Yeah. I just noticed that the clock up there tells me we probably ought to take a break.
Okay.
I want to think about what our friend there had to say from the University of Tennessee. Not representing the University of Tennessee. No. He was just connected to the University of Tennessee, and we are coming right back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
So did you see this over the weekend? Mike Leach, who has been quiet lately, put out this tweet. That horse winning, was Rich Strike, by the way, that horse, winning the Kentucky Derby today, is a good example of why an expanded college football playoff is needed. That horse hadn't won at the races leading up, but got its chance, and that's what happened. So we put this out. The upset in the Kentucky Derby Saturday got us thinking, what's the biggest upset in sports you've ever seen live? We'll put your responses at the bottom of the screen. And we'll talk about Leach later, although I'm not as smart as Mike Leach, but I'm still trying to figure out what he's talking about there. He's talking about a horse that I'm still not sure how it got into the Kentucky Derby. But it did, and it created one of the most exciting 2.5 minutes, in thoroughbred racing, I should say, that most of us have ever encountered. Let's check in with John in Louisville. Hey, John, good afternoon.
Hey, great race, by the way. And they got in because they scratched a horse at the last minute on Friday, so they substituted that horse.
My question, John, is, and I realize there are a lot of things at work here, but you would think to be in the most prestigious race in the world, you might have had to have done something. And this, I mean, I'm not taking away the Derby championship, but this horse was a loser, was it not?
I mean,
this
I know. The owner paid 30.
The only thing I've ever, I mean, this horse was trying to bite the pony after the race.
Now the owner paid $30,000 for the horse last fall, and the jockey had never run in a big race. So, I won a few bucks because we always bet on the last odds maker. So we cleaned up a little bit for a change, but 80-1 paid $163 on a $2 bet. So we did well.
It's extraordinary, and it made for really. I mean, it may have saved thoroughbred racing after last year with Bob Baffert, but anyway.
And by the way, we now know why Joe is not the SEC commissioner. He draws a hard line at the Mason-Dixon line, although Missouri is below the Mason-Dixon line. But I think he draws another hard line along the Mississippi River there.
But not to go Civil War here, but Tennessee had some issues.
Why they're the volunteer state.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri are considered the cradle of the Northeast either.
No. Anyway, say, Paul, I thought your best caller last week, and we don't hear enough from him, was Chris from Gulf Shores.
He's
like
great.
A visit, like you guys are having a beer each time he calls in.
Many.
Always positive. Your best interview was Conyers. And by the way, your best exit interview was obviously Mark, although we had to hear about Notre Dame one last time.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Yeah, and let me assure you, when you said one last time, we meant one last time.
Your best three-way call was you and J&J, because Jim was on fire in a happy way and drowned out or literally trampled on Jeff.
Yeah, he did.
And by the way, I want to give a shout out to Jeff, because it took a lot of courage for him to come out of the Big Ten closet and proclaim his love for the SEC.
And admit that his daughter and son-in-law have SEC ties.
Yeah, well, he's been to a number of unnamed SEC campuses. His daughter starred, unnamed daughter starred
John,
in an unnamed
if
sport.
If your daughter competed for an SEC school, wouldn't you tell us which one?
And the sport, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe even her name. But that's where Jeff lost the credibility. And yet, he's still inviting himself to your show. So I'm going to rename Jeff the story lady from Ohio.
Well done. Thank you, John. Great stuff. Philip is up next. Hey, Philip.
Hey, Paul. Appreciate you letting me call. This is something new for me. I've never called 2 days in a row before.
Well, Philip, you should become a regular caller.
Okay. I'll accept that, Paul. Every time I'm in the hospital, I make sure the doctor is going to have a television queued up to the SEC channel because that's how I recover from the carving on me.
Well, you know what you need to do, quit doing, is going to the hospital. But
yeah, wouldn't that be a good plan? My son saw me with my shirt off last week, and he said, Pop, you look like a half-carved Christmas turkey. I didn't have a response for it because I do look a little lopsided now. They've taken their pound of flesh and then some.
But you hang in there because I've got too much going on the next few weeks to come back and
appreciate it.
And have to, you know, try to hold you up.
Well, thank you, Paul.
That was a nice one. I think most people know what I was trying to say there. I don't want to say it on the.
I understand. Say no more.
Yeah.
Today's call is prompted by my concern about our what we're going to do at Alabama, particularly when the new schedules start coming out. I realize we're not going to have East and West anymore. It's going to be
probably not
those pods. Yeah. And I wonder, are we going to still be able to play our big intersectional games at Alabama? That really has been a
You know, it's interesting. I don't know the answer to that. Right now, and I talked to friends of mine who think they know what's going on, and some of them do. But the reason why I'm not being absolute, I would use the word Sherman-esque with you, but that's a bad word to use to a Southerner, is the fact that right now the model is this. Every team in the SEC will have three permanent opponents, and then they'll rotate where they will see everyone else within the next 2 years. But that could still change. 3 weeks from tomorrow, I believe, is the date when the SEC media, the SEC spring meetings begin in Destin. Keep your eye. We'll be down there. And that will be one of the biggest topics for that meeting. I believe that I think the SEC athletic directors met recently, and Texas and Oklahoma may have been represented, whether unofficially. So that is a conversation that is ongoing right now.
Okay. Well, we need to keep Auburn and Tennessee, and then wish we could get Georgia as a permanent opponent.
Yeah, I just don't think it's possible, though, Philip. I think right now Alabama is going to get Auburn every year. And other than that, I'm not positive. Knowing Alabama, they'll get Auburn, Missouri, and Vanderbilt.
No, I do not allow that. No, we want the big names, and
I just don't. But here's the problem: everyone has to pick the absolute must. So if you're Alabama, you pick Auburn. If you're Tennessee, who do you pick? You've got three schools that you would like to see every year, in theory, and that's Alabama. That's Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. So I think it becomes problematic at some point because. You know, everyone, you know, you want Alabama primarily from a gate standpoint. You want Alabama on your season tickets.
Yeah, we feel it every time we go there.
Yeah.
But further for Tennessee, they're going to want to, at some point, they're going to beat Alabama, and they're going to want to even schedule. It's 38 right now, and that's all because of Saban and Bryant. Otherwise, it's in Tennessee's favor, but.
Well, Philip, I've got to go here to the break, but you do this. First of all, stay healthy. Let me hear from you, and we will continue this conversation right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Say hello to today, Lane Kiffin's birthday.
Really?
He is 19 years old. Actually, that's not true, is it? And we're back to the calls, and Jim is up next. Hello, Jim.
Paul, testing. I want to make sure it's not as bad as it was Friday when I was trying to give kudos to my good friend Mark Kubiak, because my voice, obviously, I knew it was too close to the phone, and that's what happened. Can you hear me all right?
You sound tremendous.
Paul, here's the thing. I've become somewhat of a fan or whatever to John from Loserville. But, hey, here's the deal, John and Paul. I would advocate that both of you open your minds and try to shove a little sapience in there. And here's my sapient take on it. I know what I'm talking about. Jeff didn't tell me this, but I knew it was true. And when we talked after that three-way we had last week, by the way, had many tweets I'm saying how much they enjoyed and thought that was a great segment, that three-way that he and I kind of got on you about, whatever. I can't remember now what it was about.
Hey,
but anyway,
who's part of the menage a trois here?
Huh?
Who was part of this again? You, me, and Jeff? Is that right?
That's right. You and I and Jeff had a three-way, you remember? And we complained about, I can't remember now what we complained about. What was the issue? I can't remember the issue.
I do not remember.
I don't either, but anyway, I'll think about it. And anyway, John knows what it was about. But here's the point, Paul. It was about his daughter talking. Here's what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. That's right.
I know what I'm talking about. See, he didn't actually tell me this, but he roundabout said it. Bottom line, Paul, and if you got any sapience, you know it's true. He doesn't want his daughters to be known where she went to school so she can be harassed, figured out who she is, and so on, like some of these morons like to do, just like they're trying to do the Supreme Court. How do you like that? Do you like that?
No, I people are welcome to protest, but when they go to someone's home, they lose me.
Well, that's what they do, Paul. That's what they do when they don't. And that's what Jeff is trying to protect his daughter from. That's why he didn't want to mention anything about where she went to school. But she did go to, I almost said the name. And he told me, please don't ever say the name of the school. But it's an SEC school, and one of them you like. And anyway, that's why he doesn't want anything, his daughter to be outed, where she went to school, her name, or so forth. And that's good sense to me, and that's sapience. And anybody that has a sapient brain knows that would be the reason why he doesn't reveal his her name. Can you see that?
It makes perfect sense. I think he's right, because he is well-known and disliked by many people. It might create some issues.
That's right. But anyway, I thought it was also he totally agreed and liked the way that worked where I came in behind him. I called him after we'd done that, and he said, that was great. He didn't have any objection to me, and I just came in a little bit, maybe, I don't know, I came in strong, backing up what he was saying. You know that.
Well, Jim, you don't come in cold. You come in hot. That's who you are.
No, I don't come in. I don't come in like this. This
is bad, bad, bad. Jim, you never come in and say, hello, Uncle Paul.
Well, I like Mick, but I'm talking about Maddie, Maddie. Maddie, Maddie, you know.
It is hard. The hardest thing, people always say, what's the toughest part about the show? Getting in that first word with Matt.
Yeah, great, great. That's great. I'm glad you at least acknowledge that fact. What a moron. But I'm not going to go after him. But he's just an idiot. That's all I can say. I'm sorry. He's an idiot. But anyway, Paul, I wanted to give you the reason that Jeff didn't want his daughter's name or anything which in school brought out.
Well said. Hey, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. Let's check in with William in Nashville. Hello, William.
Hello, Paul. What I would like to know is, what was the decision from the SEC office on the disputed home run call in the Alabama-Missouri softball game yesterday? I'll hang up and listen to you.
Yeah, let me check in the control room. And do you guys, anybody in there know what their call was? Nope. We'll check on it. How about that? AC is up next in New Jersey.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
Are you absolutely? Quick question. Within 2 years, who do you see winning their champion, winning the first championship? Brian Kelly or Jimbo Fisher? As a matter of fact, Mr. Feinbaum at 351, I did bomb it.
He did what? I think he said, we're waiting for the replay. I think he said at 351, I did vomit. I hope he cleaned it up while he was on hold. We'll take a short break.